Yo, welcome to another episode of the Basketball Card Podcast. I am your host, Adam. You can reach me at TheReal27Guy. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by PWCC. PWCC has its premier auction ending next Thursday, which includes an MJ PMG from 1998, the gold one. The Wemby Black Shimmer from Prism, one of one. I believe it was a PSA 10. I may or may not be. I'm not sure. A box of 86 Fleer, a Shaq Logoman autograph, the Keith Van Horn PMG Green. All of those things are ending next Thursday at the PWCC Premier Auction. Another huge auction. Make sure you check it out. Guys, I've been excited to do this episode because I've got a lot to say. A lot of stuff's been going on. And I missed like a week of creating content like I usually do, maybe even a little bit more of that because I went out of town with my family. We drove all the way here from sunny Salt Lake City to go to San Antonio and then Dallas in the end for the full total solar eclipse. I want to share a little bit of my story. If you have no interest in this, feel free to skip forward to the last third of the episode that will be about basketball cards. But I want to tell the story, and I feel like it is a story that I will tell a lot. And so talking about it here on the podcast feels natural and good to me. And some of you might like it. Hopefully you do. My story starts in 2016 or 17. I think it was 2017, when the last solar eclipse was anywhere near us here in the United States. And that was, it went through, I was going to look at this beforehand, but I forgot to. It went through Idaho, which is right above Utah. And it literally was like 5 hours or something from where I live. And during that time, I was working in private equity. We were very busy. And I was unable to get away from work to be able to go see the full solar, total solar eclipse. I actually, of all the random things, I went up all the staircases in the building that I was in, and I found that there was, that the way to get onto the roof was at the top of the staircases, which is often the case. That's usually where you get roof access in big buildings like that. And I saw at the top that there was a lock, and so you had to go up this ladder to go up to this lock, and I figured that the lock would be locked, that the deadbolt would be locked. But when I got up there, it wasn't locked. It was unlocked. And so I opened the thing. Again, this is back in 2017. I opened it and I climbed up on the roof here in Salt Lake. And we watched a 90% eclipse. I went down, got my firm, and we actually invited a couple of other firms up with us. And we had like 40 people up on the roof at this private equity building in Cottonwood Heights, Utah. And we just watched it all together. And it was really cool, even though it was only at like a 90% or like 95% total solar eclipse. And then some of my best friends, some of our best friends came home from going to see the full one in Idaho. And they were like, what'd you see? Did you like it? And we were like, yeah, it was so cool. Told them about it. And then my friend Jason and his wife Candace, like they shared with us what their experience with the eclipse was. And as I listened to them, I realized that we had made a massive mistake by not going to Idaho. Just a massive mistake. Because when you think you're seeing what there is to see with an eclipse and you see it even at 99%, you have no idea that like totality, that's the word that people use all the time. You have no idea what the difference in that means. And so as they described it to us, I felt like we have to go. And so it's been, 7 years or so since that last eclipse, and we really wanted to make it. And so we decided years ago that we were going to do whatever we had to do to go to the eclipse and take our kids. And I wanted to make sure I took my mom too, because the next one is not for a long time. I'll get into that a little bit later too here in the episode. But we did what we could back when we were making plans. This was a few months ago. We'd been making plans all the way, but but like finalizing the plans and making sure that, you know, everything was rented and ready to go. It was like a couple of months ago. We looked at it, and basically, like, there's two types of forecasting, right? There's like weather forecasting, which can be done pretty accurately, semi-accurately, you know, right beforehand and like in the week leading up to it. And then there's like the sort of forecasting that you can do by looking at like the history of a place and what it's like there at a particular time of year. All the experts were saying, look, the best place to go see this thing is not going to be in the northern U.S. That's more likely to be overcast or really cloudy. You want to go down as close to Mexico as you can get. And since this eclipse went, you know, started through Texas, or went through Mexico, through Texas, and then sort of headed northeast, it was also the closest place for us to go was San Antonio or Dallas, both of which were like 21 hours away from Salt Lake. But you have to remember, I have four kids, and I have, and that's a lot. Like, it's a lot to move all of us in a car. And so planning this was just, it was really tough. And, you know, we did the best that we could, but we felt like San Antonio would be best based on that information. Well, then over the last week, the forecast looked bad for San Antonio, but you don't know until the day arrives. And so it was the day before the eclipse, like the night before, or sorry, excuse me, like the early afternoon. And I wrote, like, oh, man, it looks like, and I just wrote this on my Instagram at the Real27 guy. I wrote on one of my stories. I said, do I have any, you know, any weather people out there? Like, any of you guys know, you know, like where would be the best place to go? And I got a message late in the night from my friend PJ. PJ's name on Instagram is Java Cards 824, and it's for he and his son Landon. These guys are awesome. They make incredible content on their Instagram. I 100% would give them a follow. PJ has written for Basketball Card Fanatic once, and he's written a second time, and it's coming out here in the next couple weeks for the next in the next episode or the next I issue, excuse me. The next issue includes an article about greening, and PJ just crushed this article. He did an experiment, talks all about it and what he believes and what he learned. It's an awesome article, and it's designed super well, and I think you guys will really like it. But PJ is like one of the nicest guys that you're gonna meet in this hobby, and somebody who I have, like, who I have, as I've interacted with him, have felt like he's just a really great guy, and somebody who I'm grateful for is in the hobby, and again, grateful for his content. So I get this message for him, and he's like, Adam, I don't know if you knew this, but this is my background is in weather forecasting and meteorology. Not meteorology, what's the word? Anyway, he's like, this is my background. I used to be a weather guy. I can help you with this. And so he left a couple of messages, and he's like, you're not going to see anything from San Antonio. But we had been hearing that we also weren't going to see anything in Dallas. And so it was kind of like, I can't get in the car the night before and go drive 10 hours with my kids and my mom and my wife, right? Like, I can't do that. And so we were sort of resigned to the fact that we weren't going to be able to see it. But he looked at all the data, and he was like, Adam, I think there's a really good chance you're going to see it in Dallas. And you might say, well, it's easy to see that. Like, you can see that in the weather, right? There's a lot of things that people don't know about weather forecasting. One of the terms that I learned was cloud coverage. Cloud coverage, when you hear it as a percentage, tells you part of the story, but it doesn't tell you everything. So if you hear 30%, what does that mean? Does 30% mean like that you can only see 30% of sky? Does it have anything to do with the thickness of it? These are interesting things that I didn't really understand. And so what PJ was able to break down is like, there are some pockets here in Dallas where you're going to have a really good chance to see it, and I think you should go. And I was like, oh man, I was resigned to probably not seeing it. It was late the night before when I finally got his message. But then I like read all of his comments, and I messaged him back, and then he responded immediately. And it was clear to me that I just needed to go. Like, I needed to hop in the car, and I needed to go because Dallas is only 4 hours away from San Antonio. We could do it in the morning because it wasn't happening until like 1:45, 1:50 the next day. So I knew we could get up early and we could go for it. And so we got up the next morning at 5 o'clock, my wife and I did, which in retrospect was way too early, but we wanted to make sure we beat the rush in case there was a rush. And we started driving up, and my wife actually exchanged some messages with PJ, and he was able to lead us to a place that was near these botanical gardens. He said, you know, you might be able to find a park here, and he gave us some specific instructions on that. And there were a few parks there. We found one, and we parked ourselves there after sort of going back and forth about where we should be about halfway into the eclipse. The majority of the eclipse, like the partial eclipse, it's fun. It's fine. We saw the Ring of Fire like last year here in southern Utah, where when you look through your glasses, you can see the moon over the sun completely and the ring that the sun makes around the moon. So you still have light coming out, but it's way cooler, and it's like cooler as in like temperature wise. And it's also way cooler than just a partial eclipse, because you just look up there and you see this ring of fire, and it was a really cool experience. But we didn't really have a super interest in seeing that again or any element of that. What we wanted to feel was the full eclipse. We wanted to see totality. That was the part that I was most excited for. That experience that we had last year was really cool. The Ring of Fire thing. That was really cool. And if that's all you've seen before, or if you've seen a partial, like, you know, like, there's, it's really cool. The shadows sort of change. And the Ring of Fire is really cool because it does get a lot cooler. But we wanted, again, we wanted the full experience. And that's why we had traveled all that way. And that happens, by the way, let me just add this before I go on. That happens because the size of the moon from the Earth's perspective changes based on where it is in its rotation. And so in some cases, the moon can be bigger than the sun from where we sit. And when that happens and there's a total eclipse, then the lights go out. But if it's in a different place where the moon is smaller from your perspective, then you can't have a full eclipse where it totally blocks out the sun. It can't happen mathematically. So it has to do with how close the moon is to the Earth. If that makes sense. Or maybe it has to do with how close the Earth is to the sun. I'm not sure. Either way, it's all about our perspective and how big the moon and the sun are compared to each other. Hope that makes sense. I've had a lot of people since then who are like, why did you travel for the eclipse? Like, why does that matter? Again, it was based on those stories that we heard from friends and people talking about it. So we went, we got Dallas, we parked our car there, and there were a ton of clouds. But PJ had told me, he said, you're going to have a lot of clouds like up until right before the eclipse, like maybe like 20 minutes to a half an hour before the eclipse. And sure enough, with like a half an hour left before the eclipse, like the front, or the weather started moving, right? The clouds started going away, but there were still tons of clouds around up into the point where like right before the eclipse, like I'm talking 5 minutes before, there was the sky was still like 80% covered in clouds. And then with like a minute to go, I noticed this like wide open piece of sky that was coming towards us in one direction, but then the clouds were moving the other direction. I was like, oh, why can't it go that way? And then the clouds just like, they just parted and the full eclipse started. And what that's like, okay, that is like when, it's like you've got a light on in your room and your light is the only thing that's like lighting up the room, right? And then if you were to take that light and over the course of a couple of minutes, just slowly turn that light out to the point where then it was gone. That is what the full eclipse was like. I took off my glasses immediately. I actually didn't even have my glasses on for like the last 15 seconds. And I just watched the lights totally turn out. And then you get to the point where it's so dark, you can look at the sky and you see just darkness and this tiny little ring of light around what should be like what for where the sun should be. It's just this tiny little ring of light. And it's not because you're seeing the sun. You're seeing just a little bit of light that comes from the sun. You can't directly look at any part of the sun, right? Like even if it's just the teensiest part, you can't. So it was completely blocked out. I'm totally looking at it. My four kids and my wife and my mom are there. we're in our rented car, and we're just like all sort of just like loving and experiencing this moment together. And unlike 2017, that was only like a minute long, this time it was 4 minutes long. I don't know how long a full eclipse possibly can be, but 4 minutes of time where you could just take off your glasses and look up and look around. And it was, it was complete darkness at 1:40 in the afternoon in Texas. And it was one of the coolest experiences of my life. We talked ad nauseum about it afterwards. And I know most of you who are listening to this are probably tired of hearing about the eclipse, but the best way to describe it is just to say, like, it really, of all the things that I've seen in my life, like the craziest, like witnessing of things myself, watching the lights go out was one of the craziest things that I've ever seen. Watching the sun totally covered, not in the way that the clouds cover the sun, but in the way that only an eclipse can. I mean, it was the most amazing experience. And I have lots of other thoughts, but the last things that I'll say about this before I go into the next segment are, and my mom is 72 years old. I've got a super close relationship with my mom. It is unlikely that she will make it to the next eclipse. It's possible. She's in really good health, but the next one will be when she's 92 or 93 years old. The next one that's in. Ironically, that one comes straight through Salt Lake, which is where I live. But in the next one that goes through Texas is in, I think this is right, 2317. Think about how big Texas is. Like, that gives you a scope of how often they come around. Most places will never be close to a full eclipse ever again, like in your lifetime. We have one in Australia in 2028. One in South Africa in 2030, and then one in China in 2035. That's how often they happen in the world. And so it was awesome to go see it, and we won't see one again for quite a while.
Do you grade your cards? Grading can preserve, protect, and beautify your cards. Well, maybe not all grading companies beautify the cards they grade, but CGC sure does. CGC slabs are so much nicer than the other big three that I send all of my PC cards to them for slabbing. Not only do they make the cards look amazing, but they are ultra durable. I used to think that a slab could only be super clear or super strong, but then CGC showed up. Check them out at cgccards.com today.
I felt inspired as I was at the eclipse, and especially as we did that final push to get to Dallas in the morning, and all of the things that we did beforehand, you know, just reaching out to everybody via Instagram and the final push, I felt really inspired with like some different life lessons, like some faith lessons and some other sort of maybe more personal things. But I felt like some of those things would be appropriate for this forum as well. And so I thought I would share those. And I've just written down a few quick notes and just want to sort of like. Just sort of iterate on it for a second. One thing that I realized, and that I've realized many times before, my wife said it really well. She said, when you have a chance to do something, just go. And it's not really as simple as that, right? Like, because you have to evaluate in your life what the pros and the cons are. But so many times, especially when you're worried about things like money, and you're worried about things like time, and, you know, going away for, you know, getting kids out of school and stuff like that. So often we don't end up doing things. And that's what happened in 2017, right? I didn't leave because I had this job that made it hard for me to go, and we had other things, and it was just easy to make excuses and rationalize and not go. But as soon as it happened, I realized that we'd missed an opportunity. And so I think that that's really one of the great lessons here, is that when you have the chance to do something, like, you have to have a propensity maybe to try to get the things done that are the really cool things in your life. Sometimes you won't be able to, but that's one lesson that I learned. I wrote this down. When you have a chance to do something great, weigh it out in your mind without fear, and then just move. I think that's really good advice. I think that this applies to most aspects of life. One of my favorite stories is I knew this guy when I was in England as a missionary, whose name was John Whittle. He's passed away since then. But when I went back from my mission, like shortly afterwards, when I went back there, after I came home to Salt Lake, I went back for like a few weeks with my mom and my sister. And we went to dinner with John and his wife. And he said something that I've never forgotten. He's like, Adam, when you go home, here's what I want you to do. I want you to find the prettiest girl every day. Like, go ask the prettiest girl out on a date every single day. Doesn't matter whether you think she's out of your league or not. Like, just go give it a shot. And this is a weird story for a podcast on basketball cards, but his point was, like, try the impossible things because you never know what's going to happen. And he's like, go ask the prettiest girl with the most amazing personality, like the girl that you would think you'd never have a chance at. Go give her a shot and see what happens. And I didn't do that exactly. I never had the sort of confidence that I probably should have had to do stuff like that. But I did. I definitely asked some girls out along the way that I shouldn't have had a shot with, including my wife. and she said yes. And then we were married, the next year. And here we are after 17 years of marriage. And it turns out John Whittle was right. Like, sometimes you can make things happen that seem impossible if you're willing to sort of try the impossible thing. Now, how does this apply to cards? Well, first off, I think it applies to the rest of the world probably better than it does to cards, but I think it applies to cards too. When I started the 86-87 Fleer set when I was like 8 or 9 years old, that seemed impossible because I never thought I'd be able to afford a Jordan. I definitely came from a home that never would have, ever in a million years, did I think I'd ever build on a Jordan rookie card. And I remember going into the House of Cards in Salt Lake, just buying common cards once a week for $2. That was my full allowance. I did that for a long time. I was lucky when I could find a damaged card, because then sometimes I could get one for cheaper than the full asking price of $2. But I did it, right? And then finally, this creased Jordan came along, and I severely creased. It's graded a 1.5. I still own it today. When it came along, I was able to complete my set. And, you know, I think that, like you can complete a set that you think is impossible. This applies to a card that I've talked about ad nauseum now, too. The Kobe Bryant Logomania, which is probably the biggest card I've ever owned. And is a card that I bought last year that I never thought I'd ever own a card like that, guys. Like, never. I am not the sort of person that ends up with cards like that. I'm not. I'm just, like, a normal guy who, like, owns the first Logo Man autograph of one of the greatest basketball players of all time. And how did I get it? I sold a crap ton of stuff to go make it happen. Sorry for the noise. You can hear the water running. That always happens when a certain faucet goes on upstairs, which doesn't hardly ever go on, but I'm going to persevere and hope you guys don't mind that. So that Kobe is a great example of it. And, you know, the other note I wrote down here is I already talked about that. Start a set that you don't think that you can finish, but you can. Like, I have no regrets in going and getting that Kobe. I have no regrets in starting the 86-87 set. And the things that I started that I haven't been able to succeed at, I don't have any regrets about those either, because sometimes you learn more along the way in the process of those things. But if you really are determined and you focus on something, you will be able to do some things that you didn't think you ever could. And that is exactly what happened with the Eclipse. We shouldn't have been able to make it. We shouldn't. Life's too busy right now. We have too much stuff going on. We shouldn't have been able to go. We prioritized it, and then it seemed like everything got in the way. We had family stuff that was happening that made it hard. Like, even the car rental, when we showed up, we were supposed to get one kind of car, and then they didn't have it. And so we had to take another car that basically gave us, like, no extra room. But we made it. We got there. Turned out it wasn't going to happen because of the weather. We still tried to figure out a way, prayed real hard, and we got there, right? And it worked out. And it was one of the coolest experiences we've had together as a family. And so sometimes it feels like everything is in the way of you doing the thing that you need to do and that you know you need to do. It's hard to figure out sometimes whether you really need to do it. It's easy to have self-doubt. It's really hard to sort of navigate some of that. But my experience tells me that sometimes things are meant to be and you can make it happen.
My card post is changing the way the hobby does business. Ever sold a massive card and been hit with a huge final value fee? On My Card Post, you can buy, sell, or trade without any extra fees. How do they do it? Joining My Card Post as a buyer is absolutely free. Say goodbye to fees and start making deals on mycardpost.com today.
So as I was on this drive, I had all sorts of random things about cards that came into my mind. For the most part, I was just incredibly busy and focused, but occasionally, whenever I allow my mind to go wherever it wants to, it often ends up on cards. And so I was driving and I just had this thing that like came into my mind, these circumstances that came into my mind. I imagined that I was on a panel at the National and I was asked, maybe it wasn't the National I was imagining, like could have been another show or something, but I was asked the question, what would you like to see change in the hobby? This is like one of the questions that people ask all the time, right? It was a question that I asked a lot when I first started BCF. I would ask most of the people who I interviewed, what would you like to see change in the sports card hobby? And as I thought through like what, there's like a lot of answers to that, right? One of the things that I thought was this answer. I think people look at cards more like straight up financial assets than collectibles. And I think that stinks. What do I mean by that? Cards were meant to be collected going back to the very oldest cards, right? Going back to the T206 set and why that sold packs of cigarettes and tobacco. Going back to 1952 Topps and bubblegum. Cards are meant to be collected. And as I look around the whole of the hobby right now, and this is not something that's new, but it's a way that I'm thinking about it that's different. As I look around like the culture of what I see and the questions that I hear are asked and the way that I hear people talk about things, I feel like the vast majority of people in our hobby think about everything from the perspective of the item being a financial asset. It's not that I think that there's anything wrong with that, but that's the thing that I'd like to see change the most. And the reason that it's happened that way is that a lot of people who are here now are here because of the getting rich parts of it, and the quick money making. And even people who maybe don't think that they're here for that, I think a lot of people are. And you can feel it when people are wanting to transact. You can feel that it's a lot of times, it's a little bit like that show Pawn Stars. We've been watching that show. It's just showed up on Netflix a little while ago. And I've been watching it with my two oldest kids. And they both love it. And I love it too. It's interesting because you have like these negotiations. It's frustrating because you'll see the main guy, Rick, like he'll find out that an item is worth like $3,000. And then his offer is like $1,500, and then they'll settle somewhere at like $1,800. And I'm always like, why are people selling things for so much lower than they're actually worth? It kind of drives me crazy. I'm like, have these people like not heard of the internet? Why is it that people aren't getting closer to full value for their items? And it's always, well, it takes so much time to sell things, and so much effort, and I've got to be able to get some money. I feel like that's so much about what we're doing. There's so many people who are just like so straight up interested in the arbitrage. And again, I've been there. That was me for a long time. I get it. Like I understand why that's a big part of it. Maybe it would be different if everybody was like financially secure, which by the way, I have four kids. I'm not, right? Like I'm still providing for my family. And I may be a little bit further along in an age perspective, but look, it's like hard to run a house financially and provide. Right. And as a dad and as a husband, like that's my number one in this life is to do those things. And so it's hard. So I look at people who are younger, who are really like hustling and in air quotes hustling. And it's not that I think that that's bad. It's that I wish that a lot of that would go away. I wish that it was about collecting cards. If I could get in the ear of some of the executives in our industry, I would, and I can get in a lot of their ears, but if I could get into their heads a little bit, which is different, I would try to convince them that we need to appeal to a better part of people than the financial part. And that is not always easy. It may not be possible for some of the current leaders of our industry to know how to do that. But I think understanding that that's crucial for the long-term success is important. And it's crucial for those of us who are collectors who tire of seeing everything turn into money. It honestly reminds me a little bit of how social media is around sports now with gambling. You almost like can't get on Twitter and type in a player's name or something and then cert by most recent without seeing like the majority of the comments being about how people's bets are going to win or they're going to lose. Like, I just could not care less about that stuff. It drives me crazy. I like wish I could just turn off all betting conversations on all social media. I just care about the sports, right? Like, I look up Gobert every day because Rudy Gobert is my favorite player. And I like to see what people are saying. I like reading the negative and the positive things. Most of the negative things are from people who don't actually understand how the game works and don't understand, like, maybe some of the finer points. But some of the things that are negative are good. And then a lot of the other things to read, whether they're good or bad, are just informational and they're interesting. But, like, I type in Gobert and I sort by most recent. And it's like, all like, oh, he didn't get the number of rebounds he needed. He didn't get the number of blocks. He didn't get the number of points. Or he did get those things, and I bet against it. And it's just like people talking about gambling all the time. It just drives me crazy. And it's the exact same thing with the hobby. Like, it's so much commentary. I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy here, but like, so much of the commentary is like, well, this is going to do that financially. This is going to go up. That's going to go down. That's why BCF is like, almost not at all about financial points. Not that there's anything wrong with those things. We have a little bit, right? We have the stuff, we have the indices provided by market movers. We have some other things that people talk about with money, but I try to keep it out of the magazine. And I try to make the talking heads that I do on my social, I try to make a huge percentage of that stuff informational in a really interesting way, where it's not about the finances, but I find myself getting pulled into it sometimes because so many people want to talk about that, and it's a way to get people to care and to want to listen. And so it's not bad. That's just part of the culture that I don't like. It's not any conversation around that's bad. I'm not saying that. Please don't misunderstand. There's lots of shows that I listen to where that's like the main thing that's discussed. And I think there's value and good stuff in that. But when the whole culture feels like it's about the financial part, it's just not fun. You know, it's like somebody walking into an art gallery just asking, how much is that, everything that's on the wall? To the art lover, it's like, can you please just try to enjoy the art? And I realized that maybe we started at a place where we thought just about the numbers. I mean, I don't know if I ever did. I know there were times where like my main part of the hobby was flipping and trying to like make money, but and so I definitely have empathy for that. But I just wish that we could have less of it. That's all I'm trying to say. I just wish we could have less of it. And I think and so therefore what? Right? Therefore what? Therefore, maybe if each one of us, the 500 to 1,000 people who listen to this podcast, maybe if each one of us says to ourselves, can I dial back a little bit on the I want to just make money part of us, and we actually ask ourselves, like, why do I collect? What do I like? What do I want to own? What do I not care about owning? And what cards do I love, and why do I love them? Like, if we did that more often, I think that would be good for us. And I'm going to try to do it more. Try to focus on those things more. And that's it. That's it for my random musings. Thank you guys for joining this episode. We're 102 episodes in, believe it or not. I appreciate you guys, as always. DM me at TheReal27Guy. Let me know what you thought of this episode. Let me know if you have any other ideas for future episodes. Let me know what's on your mind in the hobby right now. I love hearing from you guys. Please share all the reels that you see, that you like. Those of you who do that, thank you so much. Please comment. Please like. Please subscribe to BCF. Please do all those things. They make a big difference. And you guys know this is my career, right? This is what I do. So I love it. I love it every day. I love the hobby. I love cards. I love collecting. I love the business things that it teaches us and teaches our kids. There's so many things that are positive. And like even all those financial things, right? But at the end of the day, it's about the cards. Appreciate you guys for listening to this episode. And until next time, happy collecting. Thanks for listening to the Basketball Card Podcast. Reminder to subscribe to Basketball Card Fanatic Magazine at bcfmag.com. Remember to use discount code BASKETBALL10 for 10% off any item in the store. That's bcfmag.com.